Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, good morning. This is Moxia, Dr. Cappuccino. Hi, you guys. You're tuned in now to the Dr. Cappuccino Show. Guess what? Many of you are planning for all of these weddings, winter weddings. You're planning some. I've even heard of getting married on Thanksgiving Day. Ooh, there's no better day. Some of you are saying, you know what? I don't care about any of that. I'm on my way to the courthouse. But ooh, wait just 1 minute. I hope you have did a lot of careful retrospect before you run anywhere to say I do, you know, joining yourself to another party. You know, the cliffs that are out there for the blind and the crippled and hard to fall over. So before you fall in love and you decide that you want to say I do in front of an altar, which is becoming zero attendance there, take stock. Do you know him or do you know her or do you just know of them? Listen for answers to be on the Dr. Cappuccino Show that can save you time, money, a life of grief, and, of course, possibly going to jail for doing something you shouldn't do to the other party. And most of all, we've got to remember that you are responsible for the next generation to keep this world afloat. Do you want to do that? Do you have what it takes? Do you have the gumption? Do you know what you're doing before and after you say I do? Well, I tell you what, you're going to hear some good news because I believe Dr. William Harrison, Colonel Harrison, I love to call him Colonel, Colonel Harrison, I hope is going to be on the show with us today because, you know, he's also a licensed minister. And he's probably going to have a little bit to say about what does it mean to stand at the altar. You couldn't get married if you didn't make it to the altar. And the altars were in church. They weren't on the outside up under the tree. The altars were not somewhere at the grocery store in your back bedroom. The altar was in the church. And most of the people on their way to say I do, they had to walk down an aisle. They had to walk to the altar. What is it about the altar? What does the altar even represent? Going back to ancient times, if you didn't get married at that altar, you had a problem. Well, Colonel Harrison, as I said, like the minister, hopefully he's here with us today. Colonel, Dr. Reverend, are you with us today?
Good morning, Dr. Cappuccino and audience. Yes, I'm with you and glad to be on the air again.
Yay, so are we, because, you know, I just mentioned this thing about the altar. So before you say I do, part three, let's jump right in. You know, I've been listening to the news. I've been talking to clients. I've been talking to customers. I've been talking to a lot of people. And they're saying, why are we getting so many reports that whole families are being destroyed? You know, it used to be if a man didn't get along with his wife, he might slap and knock her down. He might even attempt to kill her, or she might die from his assault. But now that doesn't seem to be good enough. Men are wiping whole families out. They are killing the wife, killing the two kids. They're killing the wife, killing one child. They're killing the wife, killing the whole house, and then setting it aflame. It's as if there's some deep seated, rooted hatred going on there. I'm going to get you, but anything that has your stamp on it, I'm going to wipe that out too. Why do you think this is so? And this is with those that have not even said I do. Some of them are just shacking up, living together. You know, she's paying her half rent, I'm paying mine half this. The Bible never said anything about that. He never says anything about you pay half of anything. But, you know, that's kind of what is going on now. And I know as a former Jehovah's Witness, those men had a different mindset, and I'm not going into, you know, that aspect of religion today. Many of their wives didn't work. When I was involved with them, they didn't work. They said, no, they're going to stay at home. They're going to keep it clean. They're going to make sure I have some food on the table. My kids took to school and picked up our kids. And so forth and so on. They didn't believe in that because they believed if somebody paid half of anything, their manhood would be compromised. If you can't, if you can't pay it, then don't get involved. You know, that was what it was then. And the men knew this is my responsibility. Now she got some money, fine. You know, she can let me know. But my life is not tantamount on what she got. My way of living is not tantamount on that. Me taking her into my home as the marriage, that has nothing to do with that. Now, because man, fallen man, has fallen even more so than he did about 4,000 years ago, something like that. Okay, now, Colonel Harrison, before you say I do, you marry people. Let's get into that and then kind of ease on into the question, because many are interested in this altar thing. They said, you know, I never thought of that. You know, this has gone out to people, and they, you know, they email, well, what is that about? Was an altar made of wood? You know, according to the Bible, altars are made even of stone. But before you went before God saying anything, you had to run to the altar, grab hold of the horns on the altar. You know, the cities of refuge, if you could make it after you accidentally or on purpose kill somebody, if you can make it into one of those seven cities, get to the altar, put your hands on each horn. Colonel Harrison, before you say I do, is that important to think about an altar?
Yes, it's important to think about the altar, Dr. Capitina. I'm not certain that most people understand the significance or the importance of the altar. The altar represents a sacred thing. The altar represents a supreme being, whatever one might want to call them, the Great Spirit, Jehovah, God, Allah, whatever. It is a sanctification, which is a holy place that bonds people together, not only in matrimony, marriage, but also in regards to their religious beliefs. Now, before one goes to an altar, they got to make sure that they have dotted the I's and crossed the T's and try to make sure to the best of their ability that they're compatible. When people get married, and the marriage lasts for a year or less than a year, a little over a year, they're married for passion and lust and not for the long term, because marriage is supposed to be eternal. I'll pause.
Yeah, that's very true. And, you know, some historians, spiritual and scriptural, religious historians have said that the altar represented God. When you went to the altar, you were standing before God. When you went before that altar, you were saying, God, hear my cry. Okay, what I'm doing standing here. Oh, God, heal me, cleanse me. Women used to go and sleep in front of the altars in the old churches here in Los Angeles once. They would put on all white, and they'd go around there, and the mourning bench, you know, M-O-U-R-N-I-N-G, you know, mourning, like your mourning sickness or death. Pending death, they'd all go sit around the altar and start singing, you know, all those old scriptures. I love them. So the altar represented being in the presence of God. This is why even the Catholic Church, when they have the incense balls up there, they're standing where? At the altar. Talking about getting married, you know, you got to march down the aisle to the altar. You are talking about any hard decisions you had to make. You'd go to that church. Chances are you'd fall out in front of the altar. So the altar really has a lot of significance in this, as you said. Many people do not realize that that is what it is. You know, they're reading the Bible, but they're not studying it. There is a difference. I was just talking with a gentleman earlier. You know, he called me talking about what he believed in. I believe this, I believe that. I said, look, you know what? I don't even want to hear it. You got to know. The Bible says that people may know that thou art the Most High God over all the universe, that they might know, teach them that they might know. So a person standing around could have had, you know, a pint of whiskey or something like that, sick, brain disease. Nobody wants to hear what they believe. What we want to hear for the safety and sake of our own conscience is what that person know. Don't run to me. And this, you know, I sure hope I hear them again, but I got on it real bad. Don't come to me talking about what you believe. Tell me what you know. And then if you're talking about the Bible, keep in mind I've had 30 years of reading it from cover to cover. You know, I might not have been, you know, all that and more in a bag of chips. But If you talk to me about Haggai, you sure better know when he was born, who his father was, and what he was talking about. Was he major, minor prophet? You're talking about Obadiah, same thing. You're talking about Micah, you talking about Zephaniah, Zechariah, on and on and on. You surely better know when you run to me that you know that you know that you know. And my daddy taught that too. Now, Pastor, you marry people. Do you encourage them before they get married to do any steps or premarital steps, not counseling per se, but what do you say to people that come to you and they talk about getting married to this and that one and, should they do it? Is there anything I should do before I ask her? What do people talk to you about before they say they do?
I arrange for former premarital counseling. And I cover everything from soup to nuts and those things which really strain relationships. And one of the things in particular that causes failed marriages is the lack of cohesive communication. Because when there's not cohesive communication or straightforward communication or the parties can't communicate together, or when they have indifferences or have an argument, they're not able to reason together, then they're not going to succeed in marriage, because they can't succeed and come to an agreement before marriage. So unless they're willing to change and work on those areas that cause them from being able to communicate with each other and give in to each other and reason with one another, then they're going to have a problem. Because the people must understand briefly, not only is the altar important, but God is involved in this, because marriage is a covenant. It's an agreement not only between two parties or a man and a woman, according to the Bible. It's an agreement between God, the man, and the woman. So God has to be in it. If God is not in it, then that marriage is not going to last. And if there's not cohesive communication between the mates, then the marriage is not going to last. And no point in them getting married, because they'll be wasting their time.
Yeah, oh my God, wow. That hit me right in the tummy. You all right, it's a waste of time. But now we got a problem, and it's a big one. The millennials, this generation coming up, not so much behind us, but the one behind them, there's no belief in God. There's some internet sites that are offering to marry people online, and they claim it's legal. And the advertisement says no trip to a courthouse, save the gas going to a courthouse, you and your mate, put your hand on your cell phone screen, put your hand on your computer screen, hold them, your mate's hand, and I'm going to ask the questions, but not before $499, click first. And I guess once the credit card works, then, you can... They direct you to another site for the ceremony. Then you go to that site and you have to and they said it's the electronic voice, so it's not even a real person. You repeat after the electronic voice some vowels, and after you say, I do, you click, and then you can print out your own marriage certificate. That is how far this is going. But no one is talking about how God started off putting the first human pair together. So that's how bad it's got. No one believes there's ceremonialist marriages. I read that also this week. No one believes that you got to go through anything formal. You can sit around naked as long as your hand is on the screen and say, I do. And it's legal in about maybe 12 or 13 states right now. So you don't need a preacher, you don't need a Bible in your hand, because, the bride had the Bible when she walked down the aisle. She used to have that Bible there, and then, it would be open, the preacher would start talking and so forth and so on. Zero, you don't need them anymore for that. That is incredible. And you have to click a little button saying that you had
some counseling or something. You don't have to say how long or what. Just say, yes, I've had premarital counseling. Click. They don't want to know who you had it with or anything like that. That's how this thing is going. So before I say I do, you know, going that route, how are they going to get counseled? I mean, how are they going to have Big Mama sit on the porch with them and ask them questions? How is Little Daddy going to walk them down the road and ask him certain questions, know that he knows, you know, what to do in a marriage and how to do it, you know, the older man helping out? That's gone, zero, out. It might still be hidden in the backwoods of Arkansas. You know, I'm not sure, of course. But that's the trend of what is going on. So when people call me, they say, Doctor, what do you think of this? They send an email, Doctor, what do you think of this? Because, you know, they want to hear something, whether it makes sense or not. They want to know that it's a topic or question that's been researched by living and by, of course, being out there in the world for an extended time. So now we've covered that. What can we say about people that are not even interested in the counseling? You know, you offer counseling. I know many others do. Is that something, before I say I do, that needs to be put on the table? Because we've already hit at the altar. That's very important. And I told some people about that. And they said, oh, my God, I never heard it put like that. Oh, yeah, that altar was important. It was very important. And, you know, there's some churches don't even have them now, especially here in our state. You know, we're broadcasting out of California. They don't have that. And lastly, before I ask another question of Colonel Harrison, people are saying, I don't want to hear nothing no preacher got to say. I don't want to tell them anything about my union or my mate. You know, I don't know nothing about his. I don't need him to tell me nothing about mine. Is this prevalent, Reverend Colonel Harrison? Is this something that you've heard of in the state that you're in? People don't want to hear nothing a pastor, preacher, reverend got to say. That churches are shutting down or have been shut down and are dance hall. I mean, is this affecting how you minister to premarital couples there where you're at?
It's not to that extent on the East Coast as of yet, Doc. Now I'm in the Mid-Atlantic region, the nation's capital area, Washington metropolitan area. Several things come to mind. Two scriptures. The Bible says the people perish for lack of knowledge. Several millennia lack knowledge because someone didn't train them up in admiration and admonition of the Lord. The other thing that comes to mind, scripture, there's a way about men that seems right, but the end leads to destruction. Having said and voiced those two scriptures, millennia don't have an understanding. How can I take something, or you or anyone else, listening or not listening, take something that is holy, something that is consecrated by God, and decide that I'm going to do whatever I want to do with it and expect it to last? People come up with ideas, they come up with inventions, and they get those inventions patent so that no one can take their ideas and the concept and make money off of it. You can't steal the covenant of marriage from God. It's ordained by God. Going to the altar without God in your life is acting futility, not always a waste of time. Placing your hand on a television, somebody charging a fee, that's ludicrous, because that has nothing to do with establishing the fundamental rudiments and the fundamental rules and regulation that would-be husband and wife need to govern themselves by in order for their marriage to work. People come together and get married because, number one, they're either hopefully to believe in God, number two, they love each other, and number three, they desire to spend their life with one another. And if they don't desire that, then they're wasting their time getting married. They might as well live common law and do whatever the heck they want to do, and that's why the world is in bad shape today.
That shows why the world is in bad shape, because people are, they said already they may have about 8,000 or 9,000 marriages already performed, and they call it, electronic marriage or telemarriage or something crazy like that, you know? So people have just drifted away. Now, it used to be also when a couple, after they said I do, they would already have the home set up. They would already have, they might not have all the furniture in there, but they have the home there. The men would lift the woman up, take her across the threshold. That meant something. I said, well, let me look this up. What does it mean? That was symbolic of that being her home, her place of rest, and to get it into some kind of, get it in shape, rather. That's probably not the right word, but get it in shape for children to come and for elderly parents to come. They really respected that. And people would be at the house. They might have ate, you know, at the wedding reception, but they followed them to a home. And they would, the men would pick her up. I heard where two men had to pick up a woman. She was so heavy. Now, you know, that's crazy there. But pick the bride up and take her across the threshold. And the threshold meant something. I didn't get to really what it meant, why that, what that threshold meant, but someone that I was talking to said that meant that God was covering their marriage because, you know, the threshold was where the blood of the lamb was put during, you know, the time for them to get out of Egypt, you know, that last death, the plague death. They had to put lamb's blood on the threshold, and anybody passed from out of that would die. You know, that night there and where they were at in Egypt, yeah. So make a long story short, the threshold meant that was God's covering them. The altar meant that you're standing before God to accept you in whatever you are about in your marriage. But when the man took her in his arms, lifted up, and he carried her over through the threshold, that was like to that union. That was like that marriage. Why has marriages broken down so horrifically? No one's even talking about him. I've heard young women say, shoot, I ain't going to marry him. I almost said the word S. I ain't going to marry that fool. No, no, no. I just need a place to stay. I need some money. I need that. What has happened with the breakdown of the institution of marriage?
There's a lack of understanding. As I said earlier, number one problem is communication. Number two, after a period of time, people are not willing to concede to each other and reason with one another to solve their problems. In some households, you have the male that has a dominant personality and want to dictate and dominate and use authority over his wife, where they're supposed to be equal partners in the marriage. And in other households, you have women that becomes authoritative figures. So marriage, my understanding of it, is supposed to be a 50-50. 50-50 agreement, 50-50 understanding. We share our assets 50-50. We share our problems 50-50. We share whatever concerns or trials, tribulation we have 50-50. And people are not willing to do that. There's an imbalance in relationships because of lack of understanding, lack of communication, and lack of one wanting to humble themselves to the other and yield. In certain areas where they need to yield, people choose not to change. And when they don't change, then the marriage becomes strained, and as a result, the relationship becomes strained, and eventually they separate or divorce.
Well, let me ask you this. Can the modern-day couple share 50-50? You got men marrying women with no degrees. You got men marrying women with no job. You have homosexual marriages. I was just reading about Elton John through the night in his marriage to David Furniss. David Furniss is the husband, and I guess Elton John is the wife. It was very interesting. I started to pull it out to post in a bulletin. This 50-50 thing, when that comes into play, that sounds to me that might be problematic. Now, if they go into marriage and they agree, well, you're going to pay the light bill, gas bill, and this, I'm going to pay the this, or that. Do you think that might be a better way of looking at it? Because I don't think I read that in the scripture about, you know, you get married, it's 50-50. I've never heard that. Is that something from the old school? You know, I know you're a mature gentleman. I've never heard that. I've never heard the witnesses even say something about a 50-50 marriage. I've never heard that. Because if you got a woman that's earmarked to stay home and raise a family, how is she going to come up with anything 50-50? I mean, now women are making much, much more than men. Should a woman go out there and she's earning $10,000 a month and he's earning maybe $5,000 a month? How could something like that happen? I want to know because, you know, I see the dashboard blinking. That means, yeah, doctor, that's the question. How can that be? Is that something that you teach there in the Atlantic East or what coast you're on? That if you get married, everything got to be 50-50 down the line. I don't think that's possible. Help me because I talk to people all day and all night. Is that possible? Someone before they decide to say, you won't, because she might be making more money, she might have more money. How is that 50-50? Shouldn't it be that it should be a concerted effort to sit down and see what they got going, bills, and say, okay, now you pay this and I'm going to pay that. If she has no job, if she's there, if she's supposed to be the keeper of the house, how does that work? Could that end up being part of a problem of divorce? Somebody being coerced to pay 50-50 in a relationship? That sounds like teenagers putting something together.
No, it's not. The 50-50 is not a principle of the Bible. The 50-50 is a standard that is a principle in the court of law pertaining to divorces. If one go to a court to divorce, judges usually use that as the equation to divide up the assets that a husband and wife that are divorcing each other has. So the concept comes from that, but the carryover.
I don't see how that concept comes from that because I heard and have spoken to people that have been married. The woman has stayed home all her life, and he's been out there, you know, making the money. So the 50-50 concept, which is not in all states in the United States, that really doesn't apply because what if she doesn't have 50% of anything? All she's done was stay at home and take care of kids. Now, true enough, men do not want that. That is why some have decided, well, you know what, I don't want him either. I'm going to be a lesbian. You know what, I don't need to wrestle and hassle with him and then blah, 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 blah. So, you know, and I don't know about that philosophy. You know, it might be understandable, but I think if a man goes, hey, ladies, hey, I hope that's you guys on the dashboard. If you teach men that, you know, before they say I do, make sure I get 50%. Of what she has, and I'm going to put 50% in it. Well, then that is no real valid reason for anyone to marry and say, I do. She might not have that 50%. She might be still in medical school. She might still be in law school. That's why some, and I know my son, before he got married, we agreed on both sides. Let her finish college first. So that if a problem comes up, she got a 4-year degree. They just, you know, dated for 4 years, you know, a year before. And then our thing was that she had to go and finish her degree, get the bachelor's just in case. And then she ended up making more than him. So I think it could be a 50-50 there. That sounds a little selfish to me. And I would tell the man, hey, get up out my face. If someone approached me and said, okay, we're going to do this 50-50. Oh, no, we're not. You're going to put on the table what I should pay, and then whatever you want to pay, that's fine. Not my fault I got more money. Not my fault I'm making more money. I would not do that. I know you're going to get a lot of questions saying that before I say I do, I'm going to pay 50% of the bill, even 50%. That sounds more like some kind of business arrangement than marriage. Hey, everybody, thank you for tuning in to the Dr. Cappuccino Show. Before I say I do part 3, wow, I know you guys are going to want a part 4. You're going to get it. And come, please try to be on next week. I sure hope you can under, you know, your troubled circumstances. But before I say I do part 4, tune in next week, Saturday, same time. Thank you, Colonel Harrison. You guys have a great weekend. And just know, before you say I do, you better know before you go. God bless you. Have a great weekend. See you next week.